Protest marking International Workers' Day turned violent in a number of countries. In Sudan, the army and the rival RSF, a paramilitary group, accuse each other of violating the ceasefire that was extended for 3 days. Palestinians mourn a young man killed by Israeli forces in the latest raid on a refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. Hello and welcome live from Tehran, you're tuned to World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. First story takes us to talks about May Day, where protesters are marching across the world to mark this day. Now, rallies have turned violent in some countries. Turkish police arrested protesters attempting to hold demonstrations in Istanbul ahead of the country's presidential election. A key square in the city has been closed off. In the South Korean capital, Seoul, workers chanted slogans and held signs calling for the resignation of President Yoon Suk-yeol. Workers' rights protests were also held in Cambodia. Elsewhere, over 10,000 people rallied in central Athens. And in France, thousands gathered in Marseille, Rennes, and Toulouse to denounce the French government's pension reform. Clashes also broke out in the capital, Paris. Let's cross over to Seoul and talk to Jennifer Chang this on May 1st, International Workers' Day. Well, Jennifer, explain what has taken place in Korea today, South Korea, on Workers' Day.
Well, this was a historic occasion because they haven't had these type of Labor Day protests since the COVID-19 pandemic began in the early 2000s. So this is really making headlines. For instance, in the morning, just a couple of hours before he was due to have a detention hearing, a local chapter union official set himself on fire, and he is still unconscious. Nobody knows whether he will be surviving this self-immolation. He left a suicide note saying that he was being oppressed by the current Yoon Suk-yeol administration, which is not trying to punish him for doing a protest, but is punishing him for supposedly forcing business operations to accept a laborer, and that this was interfering with business operations. So he was very angry. And when this happened in neighboring Wonju in Gangwon province, some 500 labor union members filed in front of the courthouse where he had tried to burn himself to death and held a protest against the new Yoon Suk-yeol government. The current president of South Korea is seen as a hardliner against the labor unions. He tried to extend the work week to 69 hours, but had to back down because of opposition from labor union members and from young people. And the labor unions are all organized, many of them, into two major umbrella labor unions, the KCTU and the FKTU. And these KCTU labor union members are the more militant ones, and they are the ones from which this very important labor union official who tried to burn himself to death is associated with. These two major labor umbrella unions held major demonstrations all over the country, in Seoul, in major cities, Busan, Daegu, and in Jeju. And this really was making headlines. This was estimated at well over 100,000 labor union members. Police had to send in 170 police units to try to keep traffic in order. They were marching in all different directions towards the presidential office, towards the constitutional court, which has governance over the constitution, which guarantees them workers' rights, and towards the regional chapter of the labor and worker administration in Seoul. So this was huge, huge news. And the South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol, of course, he just came back from Washington, D.C., from his summit with the U.S. President Biden. He was warmly welcomed in Washington, but not so warmly welcomed when he came back here to Seoul. Many South Koreans thought that he was kowtowing too much to the U.S., and the workers are complaining that their minimum wages have to go up, that their working conditions have to improve.
All right, Jennifer, well, we're keeping our eye on that and see if it really makes a difference, if the South Korean workers can actually get what they are asking for. That's Jennifer Chang out of Seoul this on May Day. Now we're going to cross over to Paris and see what's going on the streets there, talking to Ramin Mazahiri. Ramin, tell us what's happening your way.
Well, it's another May Day in Paris that is just full of anger and tension and violence. Our last stand-up report an hour ago was right in the thick of things. Things have sort of calmed down. But that's only after the police kettled protesters and then tear gassed us. So me and my cameraman, once again, you know, just like the protesters, we just get bombarded with tear gas and there's really nothing you can do. But what the, you know, the reason that cops are doing that is that there are a lot of Black Bloc protesters here, and they are targeting things like banks, and they're targeting real estate agencies, and they are, you know, taking apart their windows, and they're, you know, smashing things. So it's really something that has become very, very common ever since the European Union really started back in 2009. I go back to 2010, working with Press TV, and that was when there was a two-year hike to the retirement age. And lo and behold, 13 years later, there's another two-year hike, and the French people are just as upset about it now as they were back then. But in the intervening 13 years, there has been so much disappointment over the lack of democratic support by Brussels, by the European Union. It was really supposed to be a project of peace, but certainly with what's going on in Ukraine, doesn't seem to be the case anymore. However, for the past over a decade, the EU has really been at a sort of domestic war, not only with France, but I mean from Greece to Spain, all over. But it's after the two-year coronavirus pause, it certainly seems that austerity is as back and forth as it was back in 2010, and that it's just as unpopular. And certainly it's also not working, just like it never has. President Macron said that his forcing through by executive decree of the two-year hike was supposed to please financial markets. But the reality is that on Saturday, Fitch, one of the top global credit ratings agencies, downgraded the value of French government debt. So it's really not working for high finance. It's not working for economic growth. It's certainly not going to work for economic redistribution. But it's definitely not working for the French people, because today we have 1.5 million people out on the street. That's over 2% of the entire population. And given how apathetic Westerners are about politics.
All right, Ramin, thanks so much for that update. There was some technical problems, a little bit of noise with the mic. Our apologies. That was Ramin Mazahiri in Paris. Meanwhile, a UK anti-monarchy group has branded as offensive calls by the Archbishop of Canterbury on Britons to swear allegiance to King Charles III. Now, the group known as Republic, which is campaigning for the abolition of the British monarchy, said the allegiance call holds the people in contempt. It added, in a democracy, it is the head of the state who should be swearing allegiance to the people, not the other way around. Well, the group plans to hold a demonstration on this coming Saturday. The office of the Archbishop of Canterbury has called on all people in the United Kingdom and Northern Ireland and of other realms and territories to pay their homage to the king. Well, the formal coronation of Charles is set to start on May the 6th. It is predicted that the ceremony will cost tens of millions of pounds, and it falls to taxpayers to foot the bill. Limbit Opik, former member of British Parliament, earlier joined us and weighed in on how UK Republicans and Royalists are divided over taxpayer money to be spent on the coronation ceremony.
Everyone will have a different view on this. £100 million works out as around £1.80 a person, or with roughly 25 million households. That's £4 per household. Now, the Republicans will hate that. They'll say, why are we paying for this pomp and circumstance, for this out-of-date way of recognizing a head of state? The royalists will take a different view. They'll say, well, this is part of our history, and actually £100 million once every 50 years isn't that much to pay, or even more than 50 years. Where do I stand on this? I see it as an economic situation, to be honest with you. Probably the royal family makes money for the United Kingdom's tourism. And in that sense, I don't really have that much of a problem with that investment, but I see it as an investment. Let's be honest, the Republicans are completely entitled to say that because they do not recognize the monarchy as legitimate, that the taxpayer should not be paying for it. And that's probably the position they would take. But one interesting thing here, exactly for the reason we're discussing this on the show today, a lot of people who don't like the monarchy won't want to say so, because they will be criticized and attacked by others, because we don't really live in a free country. We live in a country where you're free as long as you say what the people who decide when we're free want you to say.
Now to Canada, where staff at the Canadian Revenue Agency pushed their industrial action as part of the largest public sector strike in that country's history. The union representing workers says that remote work, fair wages, and job security remain the sticking points in the ongoing negotiations with the government. The union represents 35,000 CRA employees. The union has also been spearheading walkouts by 120,000 workers of Canada's Treasury Board. The trade organization is now calling off that strike after a tentative agreement with the government. The industrial actions began on April the 19th. They have paralyzed public services, including tax returns and passport renewals. Well, fighting persists in Sudan despite a 72-hour ceasefire agreed upon by the army and the rival paramilitary rapid support forces. The ceasefire was agreed upon Sunday night and extended another day's long truce, which expired last night. But clashes once again broke out in Khartoum on Monday. This comes as the UN is warning that the humanitarian situation has reached a breaking point. Tensions between the army and the RSF erupted into conflict on April the 15th. This was triggered by the military's attempt to integrate the paramilitary group as both pushed to control the military government of Sudan. Now, the violence has killed more than 500 people and have displaced some 50,000 others so far. Well, hundreds of Palestinians take part in a funeral procession for a young man killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. The victim died shortly after Israeli forces shot him during a raid on the Aqaba Jabhat refugee camp in the city of Araha. The incursion also left six others injured and triggered clashes with other local Palestinians. Israeli forces prevented medical teams and ambulances from reaching the scene. Regime troops have killed more than 100 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank so far this year. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, was with us and gave us the details on this Israeli raid on that refugee camp. Let's listen up.
According to Palestinian paramedics, three of them had been seriously wounded and were transferred to a hospital, even to Ramallah. The Israeli forces, following the operation, pulled back from the refugee camp and arrested two Palestinians. Why the raids to Aqaba Jabhat? All Palestinian areas had been stormed by the Israeli forces, but we noticed that the incursions usually take place to the northern occupied West Bank areas, mainly Jenin and Nablus, and other areas, of course, in the center of the occupied West Bank. However, recently, and maybe in more than 1.5 months, a number of anti-Israeli operations. Shootings had been taking place in Jericho, in Ariha, and in areas around it where Palestinians had shot at Israeli military outposts and Israeli settlements. This is why the Israeli forces continue to raid Ariha and the surrounding areas in order to arrest Palestinians whom they accuse are militants or even planning to carry out more operations against the Israeli regime.
Well, the Iraqi Public Prosecution Office says former Prime Minister Mustafa al-Qadhimi will be questioned over the assassination of Iran General Qasem Soleimani by the U.S. in January of 2020. This will be part of ongoing investigations into the case. The decision is based on a lawsuit filed by the leader of Iraq's rights movement. It accuses al-Qadhimi, who headed the Iraqi intelligence at the time, of the assassination of negligence in pursuing the case. General Soleimani was assassinated in a U.S. drone strike near Baghdad's international airport, along with the deputy head of Iraq's popular mobilization forces, Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas. Iran says the prosecution of the perpetrators is a top priority in the security cooperation between Tehran and Baghdad. Iran says it sees no obstacles to improving bilateral relations with the European Union. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says Tehran is willing to boost ties with the EU. Kanani says, however, that European countries are stuck with certain issues which are in line with the wrong policies of the U.S. against Iran. The spokesman said this approach has held back economic and other cooperation. Kanani's remarks are a hint at the U.S.'s withdrawal from the 2015 nuclear deal and the West's policy toward the recent riots in Iran. According to the spokesman, the EU and its partners need to correct their past miscalculations. Iran's foreign minister says receiving maximum benefits from the Persian Gulf hinges on the conversion and cooperation among its littoral states. In a Twitter post, Hossein Amir Abdullahian further said that the Persian Gulf's security should be ensured so that its littoral states would enjoy its benefits. He called the strategic waterway an important part of the indisputable identity of Iran in the region. The top Iranian diplomat made the remarks on National Persian Gulf Day. Iran has time and again rejected the presence of foreign forces in the Persian Gulf, saying its littoral states can themselves guarantee the security of the body of water. And with that, brings us to the end of this Worldless edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
Slowly, a global coalition is shaping up to remove the use of US dollar from international trade. The days of the US dollar's hegemony appear to be numbered. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Turkey's Anadolu News Agency has covered this story and tells us more. The global trend of substituting the US dollar with local currencies in trade transactions is speeding up as more countries are ditching the greenback. On Wednesday, 26th of April, Argentina said it will pay for Chinese imports in Chinese yuan instead of US dollars to preserve its international reserves. In a meeting in Buenos Aires with China's ambassador, Zhu Xiaoli, Economy Minister Sergio Massa said Argentina will be able to program a volume of imports in yuan worth the equivalent of more than $1 billion from next month. The Argentinian Economy Minister Sergio Massa said the South American country will program a volume of imports in yuan worth more than $1 billion from next month, which will replace the use of US dollars. He said the decision to pay in yuan improves the perspective of Argentina's net reserves. It also allows us to maintain the level of activity, the volume of imports, the pace of trade between Argentina and China, and the levels of economic functioning that Argentina needs following a poor year for domestic agriculture, and thus exports, amid a persistent drought. The days of US dollars hegemony appear to be numbered, as multiple countries have adopted alternative currencies to the US dollar for international transactions. The US dollar's position as the primary global reserve currency is now being challenged. This is because several countries have started to ditch their dependency on the dollar and strengthen bilateral relations. This is a trend that is known as de-dollarization. Website teletrader.com has also covered this story. Recently, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said the transition to non-dollar currencies is unstoppable as more countries seek alternatives to the greenback. Sergei Lavrov said the flight from the US dollar as the medium of exchange in mutual payments in favor of national currencies is an irreversible trend in global trade. The Russian Foreign Minister added, "We're starting to see a flight from the US dollar. So far, it is not at all swift, but it is sure to accelerate. In fact, this trend is irreversible." The United States has already, for real, sawed off the tree limb that it was perched on, managing global financial flows and the world economy as a whole by leveraging the dollar's dominant role. Over the past months, several countries have announced a shift away from the US dollar in their international trade. Some South American and ASEAN countries have announced plans to reduce their reliance on the US dollar. The BRICS group, including Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, is also mulling the possibility of creating a common currency. In February, the Central Bank of Iraq, a major oil supplier, announced that it will allow trade with China to be settled in Chinese yuan for the first time. That same month, members of the China-dominated Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the SCO, agreed to increase their trade in their local currencies. According to Robert Kiyosaki, author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the US will suffer devastating hyperinflation and war starvation as the BRIC countries decided to dump the dollar. The Islamic Republic of Iran has also abandoned the US dollar in its trade with China and Russia. Saudi Arabia, a key OPEC member, said it will completely give up petrodollars and will start accepting the Chinese yuan. Hindustan Times has also covered this issue and tells us more. India has finally joined hands with Bangladesh to do cross-border trade in their own local currencies, the Indian rupee and the Bangladeshi taka, making Bangladesh the 19th country to ditch the US dollar. After months of intense discussions and meetings, a delegation from the Reserve Bank of India and the State Bank of India visited Dhaka in Bangladesh to discuss and finalise the mechanism to engage in cross-border trade in local currencies. In order to set into motion the initiative, two of Bangladesh's biggest banks, Sonali Bank and Eastern Bank Limited, are expected to open accounts in two Indian banks, the State Bank of India and the ICICI Bank. According to news reports, the two Indian banks are also going to do the same by opening similar accounts with two Bangladeshi banks. According to bank officials, the opening of these new accounts, known as Vostro and Nostro accounts in global accounting, will require the approval of respective central banks. Out of the total worth of Indian exports to Bangladesh, $2 billion worth of exports are said to be traded in Indian rupees, and the rest will be paid in US dollars. Meanwhile, according to Indian media, exports from Bangladesh to India will be fully traded in rupee and Bangladeshi taka. The two friendly neighbours will do cross-border trade in rupee and taka without the inclusion of any third country, and hence would benefit from abandoning the US dollar in their exchange process. The Business Standard has also covered this story and tells us more. Afzal Karim, the Chief Executive Officer and Managing Director of Sonali Bank Limited, said bilateral trade with India in Bangladeshi taka and Indian rupee will reduce pressure on the US dollar. Both countries will benefit from this. Afzal Karim said more banks from the two countries will gradually join the process. Bangladesh Bank Executive Director and spokesperson Mesbul Haq said that the decision has been welcomed by business leaders in his country to settle trade with India in Indian rupees and Bangladeshi takas, as they think that the arrangement will promote trade and reduce pressure on foreign exchange reserves. Before Bangladesh, countries like Russia, Germany, the United Kingdom, Singapore, Sri Lanka, Oman, and 12 other countries already trading with India in local Indian currency, the Indian rupee. India has emerged as one of the international players to push the trend of de-dollarization globally and has over time accelerated its foreign trade with other countries in rupee. In 2022, India launched its own rupee trade settlement mechanism, allowing countries that don't have enough dollars or cannot trade in US dollars to trade in rupees. Previously, in early April, India signed an agreement with Malaysia that allows the bilateral trade to be settled in Indian rupees. Earlier in April, the New Development Bank, NDB, established by the BRICS group, decided to move away from the US dollar in international trade as it aims to introduce local currencies for its loans. In a bold move that has turned tables in geopolitics, the New Development Bank president, Dilma Rousseff, confirmed that the bank plans to provide 30% of loans in local currencies of its member nations, effectively moving away from using the US dollar in international trade. Dilma Rousseff said during an interview on 14th of April it is necessary to find ways to avoid foreign exchange risk and other issues such as being dependent on a single currency, such as the US dollar.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are basing our discussions on the first sermon, where Imam Ali alayhi salam speaks about certain aspects of prophethood. One of it is the aspect of the duties and responsibilities of messengers and prophets. And we discussed that one of the most important, or rather one very important duty of the prophets is this particular statement that Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions and says, وَيُذَكِّرُوهُمْ مَنْ سِيَ نِعْمَتِهِ, that one of the duties of the messengers is that he reminds people of that forgotten blessing that of God, that forgotten blessing of God. And what is that blessing? The most important blessing of God that the human being has is the human self itself. And we say that the human self is so valuable because of four faculties that exist within it. The first one being knowledge, awareness, intellection, and the capacity to analyze. The second one being the aspect of the will or the free will. The third being innovation, and the fourth being accepting responsibility or being responsible. These are four aspects of the human existence that really are special and specific to a human being in a certain way.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, when we say that these four aspects are specific to a human being, we don't mean that, for example, other entities don't have this to a certain degree. They might have, for example, certain angels could have. Or the jinn are entities that have this particular, these four faculties also. They accept responsibility. They also have a free will. They understand things, okay? And all of these things that I mentioned, they have with them. But there's a difference in that the human being has certain capacities that are very unique, and this makes the human being special. And that's why all the entities were supposed to bow down to the human being, to the perfect human being, including Shaitan, who was at that time in the group of the angels. He was a jinn, but he was supposed to bow down to the perfect human being. So you notice the human being has certain perfections, and these four faculties are more prominent in a human being than they could be in other entities. And therefore, a human being really needs to appreciate the special position that he's been given and make use of these four faculties in the best possible way. Now, when we talk about the human being in this way, we realize these four faculties are actually what grant the human being the dynamism that he has or she has. A human being is a dynamic entity in a very positive manner. That means in the very time, in the very place, or in the very sense that it is a worshipping entity, it's a dynamic entity. There is no opposition between being a worshipper and being dynamic. In fact, you know, sometimes some people feel that if you'd submit to something, or if you bow down to something, then you are not dynamic. You are weak. You are lowly. You are, you know, in a state of meekness and a state where you can't do much. But the opposite is true. In reality, if you submit to God, who is the source of all the perfections, you are submitting him. You are actually submitting to an entity that is the source of energy, power, strength. He is the source of all form of innovation and progress. And because you're submitting to such an entity, therefore you are timelessly and dynamic. This is something wonderful. And a person, that's why we say when a person submits to God, he truly frees himself from all other entities that could shackle him. And this is that particular monotheism that we talk about in Islam.
IRIB English Radio presents a detailed commentary of the Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, on the program Gate of Knowledge.
Now, if you notice, when I talked about the fact that human beings, with their submission to God and with these four faculties, when they accept responsibility with their free will and understanding and all of that, then these entities are dynamic. It is true, because if you look at the systems that went against the most powerful hegemonic authorities in the world, you will see it is those prophetic systems that did it. Who destroyed, rather weakened, completely obliterated the Roman empires and the Persian empires? Okay? All of these empires were destroyed, or rather they were, you know, taken aside by monotheistic movements. Nabi Musa alayhi salam tackled one of the most powerful pharaohs of his time. These are the prophetic movements that we have. Nabi Isa alayhi salam and the Hawariyun, or the special followers, they tackled the Roman system that existed at the time. You can see that, you see the prophetic movements and how they changed the scenarios. You look at Nabi Sulaiman alayhi salam and how he tackled all the hegemonic authorities that were around him. So you notice that prophetic teachings, which is what to remind people of the human essence, of the human blessing, means that now a human being starts to pay attention to these four aspects. That means understands that a human being can know, can understand, can comprehend, can analyze, and awaken that spirit. Number one. Number two, that a human being has a free will and should be able to use that free will in the right direction to awaken that aspect and not make people feel that they don't have a will. Number three, innovation. You notice the greatest of innovations can be done in the if you follow Islam well. And now, of course, number four is the issue of responsibility and being dutiful, which if a person pays attention to this great blessing of the human being, he will be able to live a life full of dynamism and greatness. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد مجيد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
After Algeria, another African economy, Tunisia, said it seeks to join the BRICS, a group of fast-growing emerging industrial countries with diversified economies that includes Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RIA Novosti, Tunisia is considering becoming a member of the BRICS economic bloc.
The spokesperson for the pro-presidential July 25th movement told Russia's RIA Novosti news agency recently. Mahmoud bin Mabrouk cited unnamed sources in the North African country's government as saying the option of joining the organization, comprising Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, is being considered among the other possibilities. Bin Mabrouk said, "I have information that Tunisia is seriously considering joining the BRICS group." Earlier this week, Tunisian President Kais Saied spoke out against foreign diktats from the International Monetary Fund, IMF, which is in stalled talks over a bailout package for the cash-strip nation. The head of the state highlighted that the terms of a $2 billion loan deal proposed by the Washington-based organization would worsen the poverty crisis in the heavily indebted country. The deal, which was supposed to be approved in December of 2022, was postponed after Tunisia failed to meet key commitments. The IMF has pushed the government to remove state subsidies on basic goods, including food and energy, and reduce the public wage bill. The government of Tunisia, which is on the brink of a full-blown balance of payment crisis, has proposed a 26.4% cut in subsidy expenditure to $2.89 billion in its 2023 budget. However, it has not raised fuel prices this year, apparently to avoid public anger after inflation reached 10.3%, the highest level in four decades. According to Heritage Times, Tunisia seeks to break free from IMF and join BRICS countries bloc. Tunisia is eyeing a potential alliance with the BRICS nations bloc, which includes emerging economies. BRICS members currently account for nearly a quarter of the world's gross domestic product GDP. According to Mahmoud bin Mabrouk, a spokesperson for the pro-presidential July 25th movement in Tunisia, the country is currently negotiating the terms for joining the bloc. "We will accept no dictates or interference in Tunisia's internal affairs. We are negotiating the terms, but we refuse to receive instructions and the EU's agenda," said bin Mabrouk in remarks to the Arab news agency. Tunisian President Kais Saied has been critical of what he sees as the IMF's meddling in his country's affairs, particularly with regard to the organization's offer of $1.9 billion in loans. Mabrouk claimed that joining the BRICS bloc would allow Tunisia to benefit from significant economic gains that would improve social conditions within the country. Heritage Times HT had earlier reported that Algeria, Africa's largest natural gas exporter, is also perfecting moves to join the BRICS economic group, according to bin Mabrouk, who went on to say, "After Algeria announced that we'll join the group, we will also announce our intention to join the BRICS." RT had earlier reported the Tunisian president has rejected the terms of a stalled $1.9 billion bailout from the International Monetary Fund, IMF, citing unacceptable foreign influence and the risk of increasing poverty. Speaking recently, Kais Saied said he will not hear diktats and argued that cutting state subsidies will cause social unrest, while warning that public peace is not a game. Tunisia reached a staff-level agreement with the IMF in October 2022 for a loan to support the economy over a 48-month period under an extended fund facility. However, the deal, which was supposed to be approved in December 2022, was postponed after the North African country failed to meet key commitments. The loan conditions include cuts to food and energy subsidies as well as a reduction in the public wage bill. It's true that some people who don't need subsidies are benefiting from them, but we can find other ways to make sure they get to those who deserve them, the president told the reporters in Muntasir. Last month, the World Bank suspended new lending to Tunisia after President Saïd allegedly made inflammatory remarks about sub-Saharan African migrants, prompting accusations of racism. A World Bank source told Africa News that IMF will now face increased pressure not to approve the bailout. Although members of the Tunisian government are pushing for an agreement with the IMF, President Saïd insisted that Tunisians must count on themselves to find an alternative solution. Tunisia has proposed a 26.4% cut in subsidy expenditure to $2.89 billion in its 2023 budget, but the government has yet to raise fuel prices this year to avoid public outrage.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been transmitted from Imam Ali alayhi salam. This hadith is about tolerating the mistakes and lapses of our brothers in faith and our friends. As we know, friendship is very important, and friendship is one of the things that helps our personality form. It is also one of those things which is very instrumental in our felicity in this world and in the hereafter. A lot of people have been guided to the right path by means of their friends. And conversely, a lot of people have been misled and misguided because of, having bad friends. But even if we have good friends, it's necessary for us, that's not enough. We have to kind of maintain these bonds of friendship between them. And, this has its own methodology and etiquettes and way. And fortunately, a lot of times we have good friends, but we end up losing them because we don't know how to properly maintain the ties of friendship with them. So, fortunately, in the hadith, we have many instructions which guide us to how we can maintain ties of friendship with our good friend. One of the things that we can do is to tolerate and bear the mistakes and lapses of our friend and our brother in faith. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "Tolerate the lapse of your friend for the time of your enemy's attack." This is a very beautiful hadith. Right? Everybody makes mistakes. We're all human besides the infallibles. And if we become hasty and get angry at our friend because of their mistakes, then we end up breaking the ties of friendship with them. When we need our friends, when our enemy is going to attack us, and at this time, nobody will be there to support us and to defend us, right? So forgive the lapses of your brother, and in this way, and strengthen the ties of friendship in this way, so that you will be supported at the time of need and when your enemy attacks you. Imam Ali also said something similar when he said, "Tolerance is the splendor of companions, al ihtimal." Zainul Rifaq. Tolerance is the splendor of companions. And he also said something similar when he said, "A man who does not endure the lapses of a friend will die in loneliness." Right? Why? Because like we said, everybody is flawed. Everybody makes mistakes. And there's nobody in this world who is perfect. If you always are... If you always concentrate on the mistakes of a person and you break your friendship with them because of this, right, then obviously you're always going to be lonely and alone in this world. Unless, of course, you're in a place where, people are so corrupted that, becoming friends with them would misguide you and have a bad effect on you, in which case, you should try to avoid these people, such people. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the virtue of tolerating the lapses of our brothers in faith and our friends in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
This one lay. Doing a song from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.